Today we're going to look at the story of Joseph. I'm sure you have either known the story of Joseph from your childhood days in Sunday school, or watched the film Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat that was produced by Andrew Lloyd Webber in 1999. This film is based on the story as recorded in the first book of the Bible, Genesis. The story of Joseph is filled with drama, telling how Joseph, having been rejected by his jealous brothers to the point of seeking to kill him, faithfully followed his God from being unlawfully thrown into prison to becoming the president of Egypt, from unjustly being thrown into prison to becoming a prince, and as a result, saved the life of his family from starvation. The story opens with Jacob, Joseph's father, now living in Canaan. We read in Genesis 37, verses 1 to 3, Jacob lived in the land where his father had stayed, the land of Canaan. This is the account of Jacob's family line. Now Israel, that is the name God gave to Jacob, loved Joseph more than any of his other sons, because he has been born to him in his old age. And he made a richly ornamented robe for him, or a coat of many colours, as recorded in the King James Version of the Bible. When his brothers saw that his father loved him more than any of them, they hated him, could not speak a word to him. We can see the weakness on the part of Joseph's father Jacob. He favoured Joseph more than the rest of his children. He loved Joseph more than the other children. It was because he was the son of Rachel, his wife, who he loved and fought so hard for. When we favour one of our children more than the other, jealousy and strife often follows, as we'll see in the family of Joseph. But we are also going to see how God can turn a negative situation in any circumstance for his good. Because of Jacob's love for his younger son, he gave him a coat of many colours. When I think of that coat, my mind turns to the splendour of a rainbow. Every time we see the rainbow, the coloured patterns stay the same. What causes a rainbow, we ask? It is the ray of sun shining through the droplets of rain, which cause the light to split, producing the wonderful, colourful display. As we continue into the story of Joseph, we will see a wonderful picture of Jesus and how he came to earth to rescue mankind from the power of death. Jacob symbolises God the Father. Joseph symbolises Jesus, suffering at the hand of mankind while seeking to be obedient to his Heavenly Father, with Joseph's brothers symbolising mankind. Mankind rejected Jesus, just like Joseph's brothers who rejected him. We read about Jesus in John 1:10-12. He was in the world, and though the world was made through him, the world did not recognize him. He came to that which was his own, but his own did not receive him. Yet, to all who did receive him, to those who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God. Let us see what happens when Joseph shares two dreams with his brothers. We read in Genesis 37, verses 5 to 10. Joseph had a dream, and when he told it to his brothers, they hated him all the more. He said to them, "Listen to this dream I had. We were binding sheaves of grain in the field, when suddenly my sheaf rose and stood upright, while your sheaves gathered around mine and bowed down to it." His brothers said to him, "Do you intend to reign over us? Will you actually rule over us?" And they hated him all the more because of his dream and what he had said. Then he had another dream, and he told it to his brothers. "Listen," he said, "I have another dream. And this time the sun and moon and 11 stars were bound down to me." When he told his father as well as his brothers, his father rebuked him and said, "What is this dream you had? Will your mother and I and your brothers actually come and bow down to the ground before you?" His brothers were jealous of him, but his father kept the matter in mind. Notice that his father kept the matter in his mind. When Jesus' mother Mary heard about the angel visiting the shepherds to tell them of Jesus' birth, we read in Luke 2:18-20, "And all who heard it were amazed at what the shepherds said to them. But Mary treasured up all these things and pondered them in her heart." The shepherds returned, glorifying and praising God for all the things they had heard and seen, which were just as had been told them. How wise! It is sometimes better to hold things in your heart, say nothing, and just wait for God to work his purposes out. So what was the result of Joseph telling his brothers a dream? Verse 4 says, "When his brothers saw their father loved him more than any of them, they hated him and could not speak a kind word to him." I ask the question, what can jealousy lead to? Let us read on in Genesis 37:12-19. "Now his brothers had gone to graze their father's flock near Shechem. And Israel said to Joseph, 'As you know, your brothers are grazing the flock near Shechem. Come, I am going to send you to them.' 'Very well,' he replied. So he said to him, 'Go and see if all is well with your brothers and with the flocks, and bring word back again to me.' Then he sent him off into the valley of Hebron. When Joseph arrived at Shechem, a man found him wandering around in the fields and asked him, 'What are you looking for?' He replied, 'I'm looking for my brothers. Can you tell me where they are grazing their flocks?' 'They have moved on from here,' the man answered. 'I heard them say, let's go to Dothan.' So Joseph went after his brothers and found them at Dothan. But they saw him in the distance, and before he reached them, they plotted to kill him. 'Here comes the dreamer,' they said to each other." Sadly, jealousy can grow till it becomes hate. Then in turn, it can lead to violence, and at times lead to death. Towards the end of Jesus' ministry on earth, the Pharisees became increasingly jealous of Jesus. They too wished to kill him. We read in Mark 14:1, "Now the Passover and the festival of unleavened bread were only 2 days away, and the chief priests and the teachers of the law were scheming to arrest Jesus secretly and kill him." The story of Joseph continues in Genesis 37:19-36. "Here comes that dreamer," they said to each other. "Come now, let's kill him and throw him into one of those cisterns and say that a ferocious animal devoured him. Then we'll see what comes of his dreams." When Reuben heard this, he tried to rescue him from their hands. "Let's not take his life," he said. "Don't shed any blood. Throw him into the cistern here in the wilderness, but don't lay a hand on him." Reuben said this to rescue him from them and take him back to his father. So when Joseph came to his brothers, they stripped him of his robe, the ornate robe he was wearing, and they took him and threw him into the cistern. The cistern was empty. There was no water in it. As they sat down to eat their meal, they looked up and saw a caravan of Ishmaelites coming from Gilead. Their camels were loaded with spices, balm, and myrrh. They were on the way to take them down to Egypt. Judah said to his brothers, "What will we gain if we kill our brothers and cover up his blood? Come, let's sell him to the Ishmaelites and not lay our hands on him. After all, he is our brother, our own flesh and blood." His brothers agreed. So when the Midianites merchants came by, his brothers pulled Joseph up out of the cistern and sold him for 20 shekels of silver to the Ishmaelites, who took him to Egypt. When Reuben returned to the cistern and saw that Joseph was not there, he tore his clothes. He went back to his brothers and said, "The boy isn't there. Where can I turn now?" Then they got Joseph's robe, slaughtered a goat, and dipped the robe in the blood. They took their ornate robe back to their father and said, "We found this. Examine it and see whether it is your son's robe." He recognized it and said, "It is my son's robe. Some ferocious animals devoured him. Joseph has surely been torn to pieces." Then Jacob tore his clothes, put on sackcloth, and mourned for his son many days. All his sons and daughters came to comfort him, but he refused to be comforted. No, he said, I will continue to mourn until I join my son in the grave. So his father wept for him. Meanwhile, the Midianites sold Joseph in Egypt to Potiphar, one of Pharaoh's officials, the captain of the guard. So Joseph's brothers had sold Joseph to the Midianites for 20 pieces of silver. Remember that just before Jesus was betrayed, we read how Judas received 30 pieces of silver. We read in Matthew 26:14-16. Then one of the 12, the one called Judas Iscariot, went to the chief priests and asked, What are you willing to give me if I deliver him over to you? So they counted out for him 30 pieces of silver. From then on, Judas watched for an opportunity to hand him over. We have also just read in Genesis 37:31-32, Then they got Joseph's robe, slaughtered a goat, and dipped the robe in the blood. They took the ornate robe back to their father by covering it with blood. It was to deceptively indicate to their father that Joseph had been killed. Just before Jesus was led away to be crucified, we read in Matthew 27:28, They stripped him and put a scarlet robe on him, and they twisted together a crown of thorns and set it on his head. Again, notice the parallel experience of Jesus. He had a scarlet robe put on him. Symbolically, Jesus, like the goat in the story of Joseph that had was slaughtered. So Jesus, by wearing the scarlet robe, the colour of blood, was carrying the guilt of the world. In years to follow, during the time the Israelites were wandering in the wilderness, there was one important feast, the Feast of Atonement, where two goats are used as an offering, which we read about in Leviticus 16:5-10. This is the instructions God gave to Moses for Aaron and the high priest, his brother, to carry out. From the Israelite community, he is to take two male goats for a sin offering and a ram for a burnt offering. Aaron is to offer the bull for his own sin offerings to make atonement for himself and his household. Then he is to take the two goats and present them before the Lord at the entrance to the tent of meeting. He is to cast lots for the two goats, one lot for the Lord and the other for the scapegoat. Aaron shall bring the goat whose lot falls to the Lord and sacrifice it for a sin offering. But the goat chosen by lot as a scapegoat shall be presented alive before the Lord to be used for making atonement by sending it into the wilderness as a scapegoat. Notice it says Aaron was to take two goats, one to be sacrificed, but the other was to be let loose into the wilderness. It did not die. So in the story of Joseph, a goat was slain, but Joseph did not die. We again see another wonderful picture of Jesus. He was like the first scapegoat that was sacrificed. He was like the first goat that was sacrificed. He was carrying the sin of the world. He gave up his life for ours. But the second goat, being set free into the wilderness, it is a symbol of those who take Jesus into their heart, acknowledging that he bore the price of our redemption. The Prince of Life was crucified. His blood was shed for us. So we are like that second goat who escaped eternal death. So, what happened to Joseph? The last verse of Genesis 37 reads, Meanwhile, the Midianites sold Joseph in Egypt to Potiphar, one of Pharaoh's officials, the captain of the guard. The story now continues in Genesis 39 verse 1. Now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt. Potiphar, an Egyptian who was one of Pharaoh's officials, the captain of the guard, brought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him there. The Lord was with Joseph so that he prospered, and he lived in the house of the Egyptian master. When his master saw that the Lord was with him and the Lord gave him success in everything he did, Joseph found favour in his eyes and became his attendant. Potiphar put him in charge of his household, and he entrusted to him his care everything he owned. From the time he put him in charge of his household and of all that he owned, the Lord blessed the household of the Egyptians because of Joseph. The blessing of the Lord was on everything Potiphar had, both in the house and in the field. So Potiphar left everything he had in Joseph's care, with Joseph in charge. He did not concern himself with anything except the food he ate. Now Joseph was well built and handsome, and after a while his master's wife took notice of Joseph, said, "Come to bed with me." But he refused. "With me in charge," he told her, "my master does not concern himself with anything in the house. Everything he owns, he has entrusted to my care. No one is greater in the house than I am. My master has withheld nothing from me except you, because you are his wife. How then could I do such a wicked thing and sin against God?" And though she spoke to Joseph day after day, he refused to go to bed with her, or even be with her. One day, he went into the house to attend to his duties, and none of the household servants were inside. She caught him by the coat and said, "Come to bed with me." But he left his cloak in her hand and ran out of the house. When she saw that he had left his coat in her hand and had run out of the house, she called her household servants. "Look," she said to them, "this Hebrew has been brought to us to make sport of us. He came in here to sleep with me, but I screamed. When he heard my scream for help, he left his coat beside me and ran out of the house." She kept his cloak beside her until his master came home. Then she told him this story. "That Hebrew slave you brought us came to me to make sport of me, but as soon as I screamed for help, he left his coat beside me and ran out of the house." When his master heard the story, his wife told him, saying, "This is how your slave treated me." He burnt with anger. Joseph's master took him and put him in prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined. But while Joseph was there in the prison, the Lord was with him. He showed him kindness and granted him favour in the eyes of the prison warden. So the warden put Joseph in charge of all those held in the prison, and he was made responsible for all that was done there. The warden paid no attention to anything under Joseph's care, because the Lord was with Joseph and gave him success in whatever he did. Here we find Joseph working as chief servant, quite a privileged household. But because of a few moments Joseph was working alone, he was in a vulnerable position. Potiphar's wife tried to take advantage of Joseph. What a testing situation Joseph found himself in. But God was there with Joseph throughout his life. Notice what we read. But the Lord was with Joseph. The Lord gave him success in everything he did. The Lord was with Joseph so that he prospered. The Lord blessed Joseph in everything he did. Why such success, you may ask? Joseph had to do his part. We read in Proverbs 16:3, "Commit to the Lord whatever you do, and he will establish your plans." If we pause for a moment and realize who it is who is always seeking to divide and destroy, whenever the opportunity affords him, it is Satan. If we take ourselves back to the time in the Garden of Eden, Satan, who had been thrown out of heaven, was trying to take over. He was out to destroy the wonderful union Adam and Eve had with God. Throughout the Bible, you will see he is out to stifle or prevent God's plans taking place. Joseph's father and his family would soon find themselves on the edge of starvation. Satan knew that through the family line of Jacob, Jesus in future day would be born, come to earth and die, and rise from the death in triumph. The power of Satan would finally be defeated. So if Joseph was to fall under Potiphar's wife's plot, the opportunity for Joseph to become leader of Egypt and in turn inviting his family into Egypt to escape famine would not happen. Satan would have cut the plans God had when he said to Abram those many years before in Genesis 22:17-18, I will surely bless you and make your descendants as numerous as the stars of the sky and the sands on the seashore. Your descendants will take possession of the cities and their enemies, and through your offspring all nations on earth will be blessed, because you have obeyed me. How did Joseph respond to Potiphar's wife's approaches? He stayed strong, resisted, and avoided her advances. Genesis 39:8-10 reads, but he refused. With me in charge, he told her, my master does not concern himself with anything in the house. Everything he owns and has trusted to my care. No one is greater in this house than I am. My master has withheld nothing from me except you, because you are his wife. How then could I do such a wicked thing and sin against God? And though she spoke to Joseph day after day, he refused to go to bed with her or even be with her. Remember, whenever God gives us a service or duty of significance to do, Satan will, one way or another, seek to test you and break that opportunity God has given you to do. We have to stay strong. The psalmist encourages us to call on the Lord in Psalm 35:1-6, which says, contend, Lord, with those who contend with me. Fight against those who fight against me. Take up shield and armour. Arise and come to my aid. Brandish spear and javelin against those who pursue me. Say to me, I am your salvation. May those who seek my life be disgraced and put to shame. May those who plot my ruin be turned back in dismay. May they be like chaff before the wind, with the angel of the Lord driving them away. May their path be dark and slippery, with the angel of the Lord pursuing them. We also read in Psalm 37:1-10, do not fret because of those who are evil, be envious of those who do wrong. For like the grass there, they will soon wither. Like grass, green plants, they will soon die away. Trust in the Lord and do good. Dwell in the land and enjoy safe pasture. Take delight in the Lord, and he will give you the desires of your heart. Commit your ways to the Lord. Trust in him, and he will do this. He will make your righteousness reward shine like the dawn, your vindication like the noonday sun. Be still before the Lord and wait patiently for him. Do not fret when people succeed in their ways, when they carry out their wicked schemes. Refrain from anger. Turn from wrath. Do not fret. It leads only to evil. For those who are evil will be destroyed, but those who hope in the Lord will inherit the land. A little while, and the wicked will be no more. Though you look for them, they will not be found. But the meek will inherit the land and enjoy peace and prosperity. The wicked plot against the righteous and gnash their teeth at them. But the Lord laughs at the wicked, for he knows their day is coming. The wicked draw the sword and bend the bow to bring down the poor and needy, to slay those whose ways are upright. But their swords will pierce their own hearts, and their bows will be broken. What great words of encouragement for us when going through testings and difficulties. So, what happens next after Potiphar's wife falsely accused Joseph? In his fury, Potiphar throws Joseph into prison. We have just read in Genesis 39:20-23, Joseph's master took him, put him in prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined. But while Joseph was there in the prison, the Lord was with him. He showed him kindness and granted him favour in the eyes of the prison warders. So the warden put Joseph in the charge of all of those held in prison, and he was made responsible for all that was done there. The warden paid no attention to anything under Joseph's care, because the Lord was with Joseph and he gave him success in whatever he did. What a testimony. For in spite of being falsely accused, falsely sent to jail, Joseph stayed faithful to his God. I feel so blessed when I read these words. The Lord was with him. He showed him kindness and granted him favor in the eyes of the prison warden. The warden paid no attention to anything under Joseph's care because the Lord was with Joseph and gave him success in whatever he did. What an example for us to follow. We may find ourselves being falsely accused and badly treated, but let us stay faithful and true. In due time, God will vindicate you, as we will soon see happens in this story. Let us continue with the story. We read in Genesis 39, sometime later, the cupbearer and the baker of the king of Egypt offended their master, the king of Egypt. Pharaoh was angry with his two officers, the chief cupbearer and the chief baker, and put them in custody in the house of the captain of the guard, in the same prison where Joseph was confined. The captain of the guard assigned them to Joseph, and he attended them. After they had been in custody for some time, each of them met two men, the cupbearer and the baker of the king of Egypt, who were being held in prison, had a dream the same night, and each dream had a meaning of its own. When Joseph came to them next morning, he saw they were dejected. So he asked Pharaoh's official, who was in custody with him in his master's house, "Why do you look so sad today?" "We both had dreams," he answered, "but there is no one to interpret them." Then Joseph said to them, "Do not interpretations belong to God? Tell me your dreams." So the chief cupbearer told Joseph his dream. He said to him, "In my dream, I saw a vine in front of me, and on the vine were three branches. As soon as it budded, it blossomed, and its clusters opened into grapes. Pharaoh's cup was in my hand, and I took the grapes, squeezed them into Pharaoh's cup, and put the cup in his hand." "This is what it means," Joseph said to him. "The three branches are 3 days. Within 3 days, Pharaoh will lift up your head and restore you into your position, and you will put Pharaoh's cup in his hand, just as you used to do when you were his cupbearer. But when all goes well with you, remember me and show me kindness. Mention me to Pharaoh and get me out of this prison. I was forcibly carried off from the land of Hebrews, and even here I have done nothing to deserve being put in the dungeon." When the chief baker saw that Joseph had given a favorable interpretation, he said to Joseph, "I too had a dream. On my head were three baskets of bread. In the top basket were all kinds of baked goods for Pharaoh, eating them out of the basket on my head." "This is what it means," Joseph said. "The three baskets are 3 days. Within 3 days, Pharaoh will lift off your head and impale your body on a pole, and the birds will eat away your flesh." Now the third day was Pharaoh's birthday, and he gave a feast for all his officials. He lifted up the heads of the chief cupbearer and the chief baker in the presence of his officials. He restored the chief cupbearer to his position, so that he once again put the cup into Pharaoh's hand, but he impaled the chief baker, just as Joseph had said to them in his interpretation. The chief cupbearer, however, did not remember Joseph. He forgot him. Here was a great opportunity for Joseph to be recognized. Again, a testimony as to how God was leading him and guiding him but sadly, mankind can badly lose us down. But let us see what happened next. Genesis 41 reads, "When 2 full years had passed, Pharaoh had a dream. He was standing by the Nile, when out of the river they came up 7 cows, sleek and fat, and they grazed among the reeds. After them, 7 other cows, ugly and gaunt, came up out of the Nile and stood beside those on the river bank. And the cows that were ugly and gaunt ate up the 7 sleek fat cows. Then Pharaoh woke up. He fell asleep again and had a second dream. 7 heads of grain, healthy and good, were growing on a single stalk. After them, 7 other heads of grain sprouted, thin and scorched by the east wind. The thin heads of grain swallowed up the 7 healthy full heads. Then Pharaoh woke up. It had been a dream. In the morning, his mind was troubled, so he sent for all the magicians and wise men of Egypt. Pharaoh told them his dreams, but no one could interpret them for him. Then the chief cupbearer said to Pharaoh, "Today I am reminded of my shortcomings. Pharaoh was once angry with his servant, and he imprisoned me and the chief baker in the house of the captain of the guard. Each of us had a dream the same night, and each dream had a meaning of its own. Now a young Hebrew was there with us, a servant of the captain of the guard. We told him our dreams, and he interpreted them for us, giving him, each man, the interpretation of his dream. And things turned out exactly as he interpreted them to us. I was restored to my position, and the other man was impaled." So Pharaoh sent for Joseph, and he was quickly brought from the dungeon. When he had shaved and changed his clothes, he came to Pharaoh. Pharaoh said to Joseph, "I had a dream, and no one can interpret. But I have heard it said of you that when you hear a dream, you can interpret it." "I cannot do it," Joseph replied to Pharaoh, "but God will give Pharaoh the answer he desires." Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, "In my dream I was standing on the bank of the Nile, when out of the river came up 7 cows, fat and sleek. They grazed among the reeds. After them 7 other cows came up, scrawny and very ugly and lean. I'd never seen such ugly cows in all the land of Egypt. The lean, ugly cows ate up the 7 fat cows that came up first. But even after they ate them, no one could tell that they had done so, so they looked just as ugly as before. Then I woke up. In my dream, I saw 7 heads of grain, full and good, growing on a single stalk. After them, 7 other heads sprouted, withered and thin and scorched by the east wind. The thin heads of grain swallowed up the 7 good heads. I told this to the musicians, but none of them could explain it to me." Then Joseph said to Pharaoh, "The dreams of Pharaoh are one and the same. God has revealed to Pharaoh what he is about to do. The 7 good cows are 7 years, and the 7 good heads of grain are 7 years. It is one and the same dream. The 7 lean, ugly cows that came up afterwards are 7 years, and so are the 7 worthless heads of grain scorched by the east wind. They are 7 years of famine. It is just as I said to Pharaoh. God has showed Pharaoh what he is about to do. 7 years of great abundance are coming throughout the land of Egypt, but 7 years of famine will follow them. Then all the abundance in Egypt will be forgotten, and the famine will ravage the land. The abundance in the land will not be remembered, because the famine that follows it will be so severe. The reason the dream was given to Pharaoh is two forms. Is that the matter has been firmly decided by God, and God will do it. And now let Pharaoh look for a discerning and wise man to put him in charge of the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh appoint commissioners over the land to take a fifth of the harvest of Egypt during the 7 years of abundance. They should collect all the food of those good years that are coming up and store up the grain under the authority of Pharaoh, to be kept in the cities for food. This food should be held in reserve for the country, to be used during the 7 years of famine that will come upon Egypt, so the country may not be ruined by the famine." The plan seemed good to Pharaoh and to all his officials. So Pharaoh asked them, "Can we find anyone like this man, one in whom the Spirit of God?" So Pharaoh said to Joseph, "I hereby put you in charge of all the whole land of Egypt." Then Pharaoh took his signet ring from his finger, put it on Joseph's finger. He dressed him in a robe of fine linen and put a golden chain around his neck. He had him ride in a chariot as his second in command, and people shouted before him, "Make way!" Thus he put him in charge of the whole land of Egypt. Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, "I am Pharaoh, but without your word, no one will lift hand or foot in Egypt." Pharaoh gave Joseph the name Jephthah-Paneah, and gave him Asenath, daughter of Potipherah, priest of On, to be his wife. And Joseph went out throughout the land of Egypt. Joseph was 30 years old when he entered the service of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and Joseph went out from Pharaoh's presence and traveled throughout Egypt. During the 7 years of abundance, the land produced plentifully. Joseph collected all the food produced in those 7 years of abundance in Egypt and stored it in the cities. In each city he put the food grown in the field surrounding it. Joseph stored up huge quantities of grain like the sand of the sea. It was so much that he stopped keeping record because it was beyond measure. Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, "Since God has made all this known to you, there is no one so discerning and wise as you. You shall be in charge of my palace, and all my people are to commit to your orders. Only with respect to the throne will I be greater than you." Notice when Pharaoh first spoke to Joseph, stating he had been told Joseph could understand dreams. Notice how Joseph answered him. He said in Genesis 41:16, "I cannot do it." Joseph replied to Pharaoh, "But God will give Pharaoh the answer he desires." Each one of God's children have been given a gift of some sort. It is easy for us to be proud when God uses us with the gift given to us. We are only God's servants, using the gifts God has lovingly endowed on us. It is His power working through us. Let us humbly acknowledge that to those we serve, to give God the glory. We can now see how God vindicated Joseph. Joseph needed to be patient, waiting for God's timing. There are times in our lives when we know we have a gifting or a calling on our life, but we seem to be constantly being dismissed by our leaders. But take heart. Often there can be a situation occur where no one else seems to have an answer or gift in the situation. Then the focus will centre on you. The leaders will suddenly recognise you. You will find yourself being used by God to utilise the gifts God has given you. But notice what qualities Pharaoh recognised in Joseph, which are so important when appointing another in the service of God. We read in Genesis 41:38, "So Pharaoh asked him, 'Can we find anyone like this man, one in whom is the Spirit of God?'" Joseph needed to be God-led. We then read in Genesis 41:41-57, "So Joseph said to Pharaoh, 'I hereby put you in charge of the whole of the land of Egypt.' Then Pharaoh took his signet ring from his finger and put it on Joseph's finger. He dressed him in the robe of fine linen, put a gold chain round his neck. He had him ride in a chariot, and his second-in-command people shouted before him, 'Make way.' Thus he put him in charge of the whole land of Egypt. Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, 'I am Pharaoh, but without your word, no one will lift hand or foot again in all Egypt.' Pharaoh gave Joseph the name Zephaniah-Pineah and gave him Ashnoth, daughter of Potipharah, priest of On, to be his wife. And Joseph went throughout the land of Egypt." Joseph was 30 years old when he entered the service of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and Joseph went out from Pharaoh's presence and travelled throughout Egypt. During the 7 years of abundance, the land produced plenty. Joseph collected all the food produced of those 7 years of abundance and stored in Egypt in the cities. In each city he put the food grown in the fields surrounding it. Joseph stored up huge quantities of grain like the sand of the sea. It was so much that he stopped keeping records because it was beyond measure. Before the years of famine came, two sons were born to Joseph by Asenath, daughter of Potipharah, priest of On. Joseph named his firstborn Manasseh and said, "It is because God has made me forget all my troubles and all my father's household." The second son he named Ephraim and said, "It is because God has made me fruitful in the land of my suffering." The 7 years of abundance in Egypt came to an end, and the 7 years of famine began, just as Joseph had said. There was famine in all the other lands, but the whole land of Egypt there was food. When all Egypt began to feel the famine, the people cried to Pharaoh for food. Then Joseph told all the Egyptians, "Go to Joseph and do what he tells you." When the famine had spread over the whole country, Joseph opened all the storehouses and sold grain to the Egyptians, for the famine was severe throughout Egypt. And all the world came to Egypt to buy grain from Egypt, from Joseph, because the famine was severe everywhere. Let us pause for a moment and reflect on Joseph's situation that changed so much. His own family, except his father, rejected him. He found himself in a foreign land with his master's wife seeking to molest him. He is falsely accused and sent to prison, but then under God's mighty hand, through translating Pharaoh's dream, he suddenly finds himself governor of Egypt. Then he has the joy of marrying and having two sons. We can see how much God blessed Joseph because he stayed faithful to him. And notice, Joseph was 30 years old when he began to be governor of Egypt. It's the same age that Jesus began his ministry on earth. I now wanted to share a personal testimony similar to what Joseph experienced. Back in the 1980s, there was an extended national coal strike in England, which greatly affected the mine and engineering manufacturing company I was working for. As a result, there was a sudden change with the company employing a new managing director, who we discovered had been a friend of the chief in charge of the coal board. They both had a very hard, evil nature, not willing to compromise or have any of sympathy for anybody or union or club in the company. Our new boss was appointed to strip the unity of the company and reduce the workforce from 1,500 to 1,100 workers. Very quickly, things happened with many employees being made redundant, including some of the top management, who, if they did not bow to the MD's orders, soon found themselves without a job. He needed to destroy the unity of the company to minimise any resistance to the change. I was part of a small group of Christians who had set up a Christian fellowship in the company, meeting each week for Bible study and prayer. All of the fellowship became redundant, with the exception of one who would take voluntary redundancy, who felt the time was right for him to go into full-time service for the Lord, of eventually becoming the Assemblies of God Pentecostal Royal Rangers Chief Commander for the British Isles. Similar to the Boys Brigade, which is an international, interdenominational Christian youth organisation. For me, who by now had moved on from being the assistant to the financial controller, was now working as chief administrator in the drawing office, which meant quite a boost in my salary, with a staff of 5 people under me, of which 3 worked in the print room. The senior supervisor of the print room had taken voluntary redundancy, so when I as a Christian was made redundant, rather than be without a job, I thought I would apply for her job. After some days waiting, the drawing office manager called me into his office to inform me that I was unsuccessful in getting the job. The second in command had been given the job of supervisor, so this position was no longer available. But I could take the place of the junior in the print room, whose job in the main was just retrieving and filing away drawings. I was taken aback by the offer, realising that after working 6 months in that position, my salary would be cut to what the junior had been getting, as well as feeling very humiliated because I would have to take such a drastic demotion. I was very aware that there were those in management who wanted to see me leave because some months back, due to lack of responsibility taken by some of the draftsmen while the manager was on holiday, by not working a whole week, spending the time just talking and drinking coffee, I felt it an injustice to the firm and reported it, bringing me into some isolation for a short while. After some prayerful thought about taking the low position, I decided I would take the junior job. The members of the drawing office viewed that the lower position as a very courageous move, and I considered it a good witness. It now meant the person I had once been in charge of and supervised was now my boss. Yet she still continued to approach me and ask for help and advice on all the important issues or with any of the printing machinery that had broken down. But I soon found some tension building up among the staff I was under. My previous immediate boss, who was rarely came to inquire if anything in the department was running all right, suddenly was taking a very hands-on approach. The difficulty was that he did not know anything about the run of the department, so he also started sheepishly coming to me asking for advice as to how things worked and who the contacts were whenever a printing machine was not working. My new boss above me, who was previously part of the printroom staff and was now supervisor, was nervously insecure working with me, knowingly feeling totally inadequate to run the department. She was constantly asking me advice if she was not able to get the answer from my old boss. If I had not been a Christian, my colleagues would have got a hard time. If the circumstances were supervised by any other person who had not the same Christian values, they would not have got any help at all. But there was a strong voice saying to me, "You continue to live as before and show help in any way possible." As I was to discover later, my supervisor was watching me constantly in case I should usurp my position. Without warning, she and my senior boss ushered me into the senior drawing office manager's office. My supervisor informed the manager that I had been taking telephone calls from the company buyer, helping them to clarify dimensional details on prints of drawings that were of inferior quality. This, I was told, was not allowed to be undertaken by the staff of the print room, so they said to me, "We are giving you a written warning. It happens again, we will dismiss you." I was feeling very upset and shocked at the heavy-handed way they had dealt with me, yet knowing that my supervisor was using this situation to create a very defensive stand. I do appreciate that normally the print room are not qualified in reading drawings, yet I was an engineer, well able to read drawings, seeking to help the buying staff, saving them walking the far distance of the factory to the print room. For myself, a quiet word from my supervisor or taking on these telephone calls from the buyer would have sorted the situation. One member of the drawing office, who was always questioning me on the future events of Israel in the light of Israel's present crises, came to speak to me in the print room. About 12 months after I had started working in the department, he came down to get a print and announced that he had a dream about me. In the dream, I was going to be back up working in the drawing office. I told nobody, obviously dismissed what he had told me, yet I felt how nice it would be to be back upstairs. By now, the current managing director had achieved most of the changes, but the works union were still quite strong and at times working a rule, preventing the machines from leaving the works on time. One weekend, the current managing director took it on himself to go into the factory and got up into one of the cranes and help with loading the machinery onto the lorry. The following Monday, it was reported that a heavy hook from one of the cranes had hit the managing director on his toe and had received some damage. Then it was reported that he was getting nosebleeds and within days was heard he had left the company. I cannot emphasize how, as this man was no longer leading the company, it affected the atmosphere of the employees. You felt a freedom. It was tangible. Let's read those words in Ephesians 6:12. "For our struggle is not against flesh and blood, against the rulers, against the authorities, against the powers of this dark world, and against the forces of evil in the heavenly realms." The very presence of this man carried the very nature of Satan, as we read in John 10:10. "The thief comes only to steal and destroy. Jesus said, 'I have come that they might have life and have it to the full.' Anyone who is out to break down unity and destroy has no time for Christian values." Within a few days, another managing director was appointed to run the company, and over the next few weeks we discovered that he was a gentleman, very approachable, and specifically appointed to rebuild the morale of employees and to lead the factory in a new direction by bringing unity, reassurance, and stability. It was not many days after this new man had been appointed that I got a telephone call from the technical director. His opening remarks were, "This is a ridiculous situation you have been placed in, David. I want you to come and work back up in the drawing office. I recalled the dream one of the draftsmen told me some weeks before. I was now given a job working alongside all the draftsmen, transferring the material content of each finished drawing and entering it onto the main data computer. This would enable the buying department to look straight on the computer and know what materials to purchase for the manufacturing process. It was so ironic that only a matter of some weeks passed I was being treated with a sack if I was to read a drawing, where now almost the whole time was taken up reading drawings, and under the approval of the same management. It tested my faith and my resolve to show how I would react to this humiliating situation. But praise God, he vindicated me and restored my status in the company. Please listen to part two of this message, where we discover the true purpose God has for Joseph by being sold into Egypt.